Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now, you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow. All right, happy Monday, and we're glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. It's 800-941-SEAN. I've got a message for all of those in the mainstream media all weekend. Wow, the president listened to Sean Hannity and fired all of these prosecutors, U.S. attorneys. And I'm like, okay, I've got an answer for you dopes out there. You obviously know nothing about Donald Trump. If Donald Trump took notes from Sean Hannity, I can tell you there was a time during the campaign, a couple of times, I said, maybe you want to stop tweeting. And guess what he did? He kept on tweeting. I had such a profound impact on his thinking. I mean, I'm loving the credit you're all giving me. You know what they don't want to do? They don't want to give him the credit. So they'll give it to anybody, even me. And you know, Hannity did it because he had a monologue just the night before. He said, these people need to go. I wish I had that kind of power. Then the president wouldn't have tweeted. And by the way, now in retrospect, I think he was right and I was wrong on tweeting. He's right. That's like having your own newspaper. You know, when I have to fight people, I'd rather fight them on Twitter than waste precious airtime going after Chaz Bono, who I was fighting this weekend and having. Nobody understands what tweeting is to me. Tweeting is, okay, you want to be a jerk. You want to have a fight. Let's go. But I'm not giving you precious airtime on my radio or TV show. But I'll do it on Twitter because, number one, I'm home or I'm on the road or I'm in a plane and I'm bored. I do it to entertain myself, number one, and I do it, number two, because I want to inform people about things that I'm discovering as I go throughout my weekend or night or whatever. And I also want to tell my friends, my audience, what's going on now. It just so happens people like it when I start fights. Wait, stop, correct myself. I never start the fight. Never. I always respond. I never start the fight. They hit me, and then I have a rule. It's kind of from my martial arts training. You hit me, and I'm going to hit you back 10 times harder. And then if you hit me again, I'm going to keep pounding. And then if you hit me again, I'm going to keep pounding. Unless I get bored, then I say, oh, this is boring. I'll move on to somebody else. That's how it works on Twitter. All right, three top stories we are talking about. One is the fact that the U.S. attorneys, 43 of them, were let go, and how absolutely insane the media analysis is about this. You know, I guess if I was arrogant, I can come on there. Well, yes, I think I suggested on my TV show, and of course the president, of course he listened to me. That's not how it works. The president's his own man. And I have seen him in action. I have watched him take a consensus of a room on topics. Remember, I was out on the road with him more than any other reporter during the campaign. I've watched how he goes through the decision-making process. I've watched him agree with people, and I've watched him disagree with people. I've watched him. I'll give you an example. He loves his children. I've watched his children tell him something, and he does something completely different. I've seen them give him advice, and he totally listens to it. It's a matter of he filters it through his own instincts. Probably Trump's best advisor is Trump. Because there were a lot of people telling him a lot of things during the campaign, and he didn't listen, to the conventional way of doing things, and not being conventional has helped him. Now, we have a lot more on the alt-left. I'm going to get to that in a second, and the freak-out and the Russia hypocrisy, because I have new information I'm going to share. I want to start with health care. Look, I can come on the air every day, and I can repeat myself. And by repeating myself, I would say that it, to me, is beyond disappointing that after 8 years of running on repeal replace, that the Republicans are still not there yet. I can go through the whole history of it. What the impact that Obamacare had on the 2010 election, promises in 2014, the president's promises to repeal and replace. It's beyond frustrating to me. It is really frustrating to me that I think there was a better way to do this. And simply it would have been in the lead up to the rollout of the bill, all of these groups that are now against it. You just heard Senator Rand Paul. We've heard from Mike Lee. We've heard from Ted Cruz. We've heard from Marco Rubio. We've heard from the Freedom Caucus members, even study group members. We've heard from the Cato Institute, Heritage Action. We've heard from Americans for Prosperity. We've heard from all these different groups. And it just goes Freedom Works and the Club for Growth. They're all against it. Now, in my mind, and, you know, I've run businesses my entire life. It may surprise you, outside of my radio and TV job, I actually have a couple of little businesses that I run, that I've run for years. I've been in business since I was in my late teens and early 20s. I understand how business works. I understand how contracts work. If you really want to learn about life in so many different ways, how to deal with people, how to negotiate, how to under-promise, over-deliver was always something that I held on to. And if I promise the best election coverage available on your radio and television dial, I want to deliver on that, and I want to outperform what your expectation is. Now I'm promising to hold them accountable, and I'm doing it right now. And I'm saying the fact that they didn't do this and have this ready to go with a consensus within the 8-year time period that they've been running on this is so far removed from any way that I like to think or do business. It would be like me being a contractor or me doing a business deal with somebody and saying, all right, let's just write the contract up and then we'll negotiate the deal points. It doesn't work that way. If I was in charge, I would have brought in the Freedom Caucus. I would have brought in the incoming Health and Human Services Secretary, Tom Price. I would have brought in the House leadership. I would have brought in the Senate leadership and the Senate opposition. We'd go over all the challenges and problems that are associated with repealing and replacing Obamacare. We deal with the problems of an obstructionist Senate where nobody on the left side is ever going to support anything. If Donald Trump offered free health care and a free doctor for every American, they still wouldn't support it. So they're just dead set against them in every way, shape, matter, and form. But I would have brought all the different factions in together, and I would do what Newt Gingrich said. And that is, all right, the legislative process is ugly, it's messy, it's complicated because you got to use reconciliation. You need reconciliation because you only need 51 votes. You don't need 60 votes to get out of cloture and get to and you'd have to get some Democrats on board. So you got to use the reconciliation process. That complicates things. And I would have created a box. And inside the box, I'd say to the Freedom Caucus, what do you guys absolutely need to pass this bill? And then I'd say to Rand Paul, what do you absolutely need? I'd say to everybody. And then somehow you work out all the differing factions in there and you put all of their ideas in a box and you bring it together and you come up with a solution that's actually going to work for the American people. And that is using the principles the Republican Party is supposed to stand for, limited government, free markets, competition, you know, address with the issues of the uninsured. That's all a part of it. We know the Democratic talking points before you even begin the debate. Republicans want to kill grandma. Republicans want to throw granny over the cliff. Republicans want little children to die and all the hysteria that is so predictable and that we've followed for years and years and years. And then within that framework, I'd keep everybody in a room for like a week until they can't stand each other. And at some point, you're going to get a break. At some point, the negotiation is going to come together. And at the end of the day, if everybody in that room knows that Obamacare has been a disaster and it is crumbling of its own weight, then you're going to have to compromise and it's going to be as good as we can possibly make it. That's how the legislative process works. To me, they did it ass backwards. To me, you know, coming out with the bill, then having a public fight, intramural civil war was just the wrong way to do it. And there's so many, you know, one of the reasons I've been spending so much time with Dr. Josh Umber on this program of Atlas MD is because there's always a great, innovative, new paradigm that we could apply across the board, institute a new model that defeats the old bureaucratic model. And he does it by creating a cooperative with fellow doctors. They have about 600 patients each. Every adult pays $50 a month. They get unlimited health care. Every child, $10 a month, unlimited health care. And by unlimited health care, that means you see the doctor anytime you need to see one. You talk to the doctor. You tell the doctor everything that you need done. And, you know, and he even went and negotiated pharmaceutical prices at 95% discounts. It's an amazing thing that this guy's been able to accomplish. And even better than that, he's institutionalized it and shown other doctors how to make this paradigm, this model, this transformative model work. And when you couple that you get all the insurance, you get all your stitches taken care of, you get your pharmaceuticals, you get your medicines, it's dispensed directly by the doctor. And then you get, you know, broken bones and x-rays or X dollars, cheap pennies on the dollar than you normally pay. You couple it with catastrophic insurance. And that means, what is insurance supposed to be for? Insurance is supposed to be for, oh, my God, what if? What if I run somebody over with my car and he happens to be a father of five children and he has no money? Well, the insurance is so that you can pay that father and make up for the lost income by either killing him or making it so that this guy can't work for 6 months. That's what insurance is for. Insurance is for if you get cancer, God forbid, if you have a heart attack, God forbid, you get in a bad accident, God forbid, that what the co-op doesn't pay, the insurance company will kick in. And catastrophic insurance is one of the cheapest insurance, because if you're 30 years old, the odds of you getting cancer or a heart attack are pretty minute. So let's say you want really cheap catastrophic insurance, put in a $10,000 deductible, a lot of money if something bad happens, but it's not going to kill you. Or if you can't afford 10, you go 5. If you can't afford 5, you go 2. Whatever it is, but you'll still pay more a month based on how big a deductible you may have. So all of your medical needs are covered. So let's say the catastrophic plan is 150, you know, whatever it happens to be, maybe $50 a month. $100 a month. All right, so that's what you're paying. And you're covered with locally for all the average medical stuff you need. And if you're also covered if the God forbid scenario ever unfolds. It's not that complicated here. Here's what Donald Trump said. This is what he said.
The House bill to repeal and replace Obamacare will provide you and your fellow citizens with more choices, far more choices, at lower cost. Americans should pick the plan they want. Now they'll be able to pick the plan they want. They'll be able to pick the doctor they want. They'll be able to do a lot of things that the other plan was supposed to give and it never gave. You don't pick your doctor, you don't pick your plan, you remember that one. We're not going to have one size fits all. Instead, we're going to be working to unleash the power of the private marketplace to let insurers come in and compete for your business. And you'll see rates go down, 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 and you'll see plans go up, up, up. You have a lot of choices. You'll have plans that nobody's even thinking of today. They will have plans that today nobody has even thought about, because the market's going to enforce that with millions and millions of people wanting health care. More competition and less regulation will finally bring down the cost of care, and I think it'll bring it down very significantly. Unfortunately, it takes a while to get there because you have to let that marketplace kick in, and it's going to take a little while to get there. Once it does, it's going to be a thing of beauty. I wish it didn't take a year and 2 years, but that's what's going to happen, and that's the way it works, but we're willing to go through that process. Working together, we'll get the job done.
That's the president. He gets it. He's the deal maker. Now that Congress got ahead of itself, he'll come in and he has to fix the mess they created. And they put him in a horrible position. They could have done this behind closed doors. They didn't need a public fight on this, in my opinion.
Still not sick of winning. Making America great again. Sean Hannity's on the air right now.
Prices are for base buildings only. Do not include windows, doors, or accessories. Warning! Don't let your business get left behind in what is likely to be the biggest economic boom in recent history. If you need to build to grow your business, call General Steel today. Steel prices are expected to rise, but you can still lock in your price on a General Steel building if you call now. For example, a 40 by 60 foot building is still less than $25,000. Even an 80 by 150 foot building is under $99,000.
Imagine 12,000 square feet for under $99,000.
This building is designed for your needs, no wasted space. And you get the General's quality and 50-year structural warranty at a price you can afford. You can still save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction by calling General Steel today. As much as half. So don't let rising steel prices put your project out of reach and stop you from making your company great. Call now. 877-81-STEEL. It's not too late. Call. 877-81-STEEL. That's 877-817-8335.
As we roll along, we're in Washington, D.C. today, and I had a meeting set up. I had to cancel, unfortunately, because otherwise I'm going to be stuck in Sin City forever, and I want to get the hell out of here. And it's just not going to work out, unfortunately. Anyway, yeah, we're expecting a big snowstorm. Okay, there you go, 18 inches in some places. So I want to just address the media from this weekend, and I was actually pretty amused by a lot of it, and finally I just realized, all right, these people are so dumb, somebody's got to take them on. Now, I call the media in this country, the alt-left, because they're radical left, propaganda, destroy Trump media, because they're out to destroy Trump. These are the people that never vetted Barack Obama. We did their job, they never did it. They never held Obama accountable. Keep your doctor, keep your plan, save $2,500 per family per year. These are the same people exposed as having colluded with Hillary Clinton. They bitch, whine, and complain that everyone sees them for what they are. Overpaid, lazy, lying, ideological, and fake news. They can't stand that they have been exposed. The Russia-Trump story is fake news. It's just at this point, there's no evidence after all this talk. None whatsoever. And what's even more fascinating is then you get the Never Trumpers jumping into this, and they don't even recognize what's so transparent and obvious, even at NRO. What a disappointment they became. They did everything they could do to defeat Donald Trump. They failed. And if they had their way, Hillary Clinton would have made that Supreme Court choice, not Donald Trump. Now these same Never Trump idiots, they can't recognize that there are felonies taking place when you release information against American citizens that shouldn't be released. That's a felony. It's a violation of the Espionage Act. And it's happening by some, probably a very few in the intelligence community. I have great respect for those that risk their lives for us. But I have some new news on this, and I'm going to address the fact that I am responsible for the firing of 43 U.S. attorneys this weekend, or a monologue that I gave on TV is somehow responsible, because that's what the narrative this weekend was. You know, if I was arrogant like some of those jerks that I'm going to be talking about, I'd come on the, yes, it happened because of me. But then I'd be lying to you and I'd be just like them, and I can't do that. We'll continue. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Healthcare, one of our big issues today, deep state. I've got some new developments I'll share in a minute. And our other top story today, our top three, is the 43 prosecutors that were fired Friday by the administration. Now, all weekend long, if you watched any of these stupid television shows with stupid people that don't know what they're talking about, that are more wrong than ever, you would think that I was the one that influenced the president to do this. It's just not true. Listen.
On Friday, the attorney general asked for resignation letters from all 46 federal prosecutors who were Obama-era holdovers. Barrara refused. "I didn't resign," he tweeted Saturday. "Moments ago, I was fired." But ABC News has learned there were crossed signals. Sources say Barrara received a voicemail Thursday from the White House asking him to call back and speak with the president. No reason given. Barrara believed speaking with the president would violate DOJ protocols. So he contacted the Attorney General's office instead and told the White House he could not speak with the president. The White House declined to comment on the phone call. Sessions' decision to clean house comes one day after Trump loyalist Sean Hannity called for a purge.
"For weeks, we've been warning you about the deep state Obama holdover government bureaucrats who are hell-bent on destroying this president, President Trump. Tonight, it's time for the Trump administration to begin to purge these saboteurs before it's too late."
Deep state, Obama holdovers. I wasn't specifically even talking about the attorneys in this case. I mean, it's beyond stupid here because, you know, if you go back to 1993, at about the same time in his administration, Janet Reno fired all 93 of them. Trump fired 43 of them. Now, I know this guy, Preet Bharara, who's well known in New York for having taken down a lot of big political figures in Albany, which is the most corrupt sewer in the entire country. And I guess he didn't want to talk to the president, but he went and met the president. So he's contradicting himself. According to reports, he met with the president. The president said he wanted him to stay on. But as I understand it, my take on that is that's because of Chuckie Schumer. And Chuck Schumer wanted him to stay in place. I've spoken now to more than a few people that say that Chuck Schumer has his own ethical, potentially indictable offenses that he's most worried about. And he wanted Barrera there for his own personal reasons. So I'm going to get to the bottom of that as time goes on, find out that there's a lot of truth to that. And so, you know, this is actually common practice. And George Bush did it in his second term and got rid of 8 U.S. attorneys. And Clinton got rid of 93. All right, we'll get to the deep state in a second. We want to get a weather update. Apparently, we have a major nor'easter coming all the way up the East Coast from right here in our nation's capital through New York and New England and Boston and beyond. And our best friend, the official meteorologist of the Sean Hannity Show, Joe Bastardi, WeatherBell.com, is with us. Sir, how are you?
Very well. And, of course, folks, Sean is the official Western Long Island weather observer for me, where he grades my forecast. So, you know, we have to be accountable, right, Sean?
Well, you know what the funny thing is if everybody thinks that I convinced Donald Trump to fire these U.S. attorneys, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. I'm just giving my point of view that every Obama holdover, every leaker and everybody sabotaging him needs to go. That's just common sense. And the funny part is that, well, if Trump really listened to me, I told him early in the campaign he should probably stop tweeting. And I would argue now that I was wrong and he was right. I love that he keeps tweeting, and I love the media can't take it.
Yeah.
Anyway, how are you? How bad is this thing going to be?
Okay. Well, in D.C. proper, once you get in the northern western suburbs, and this is going to begin by 8 o'clock tonight, we're looking for 8 to 12 inches. It'll probably be a mixed width change to sleet and rain, even in northwest of D.C. And in the city, probably 3 to 6 inches. You go up to Baltimore, 4 to 8 and 8 to 12 right next to it. Philadelphia looks to me to be in 6 to 12 inches, and to the northwest of the city, once you get a little bit to the northwest, maybe 30, 40 miles, it's just an out-and-out blizzard. This is the worst storm north of the Mason-Dixon line and east of the crest of the Appalachians in March since 1993, the most widespread, massive storm as far as that goes. Now, the interesting thing about this is
who's going to get hit the hardest? You didn't mention, you know, New York City, Long Island, Boston.
I was moving up there after I made that point. I think New York City proper gets 12 to 18 inches of snow, 18 to 24 once you get outside 287. Long Island, 6 to 12 western part, 3 to 6 eastern part, changes over to rain in that area. And you get hurricane-force wind gusts on Long Island for 3 to 6 hours tomorrow, up into New England tomorrow night. The starting time in Boston looks to be around sunrise. It's all over by evening. When you get out to Worcester, 20 to 30 inches, I think 10 to 20 inches around Boston. But out on the Cape, it gets wiped out. Providence, I'm looking for 10 to 20 inches northwest of the city, 5 to 10 south of the city, where I think a change to rain is going to occur. The worst part of this storm, and where it's going to just be an out-and-out blizzard, is in eastern Pennsylvania, northern New Jersey, interior southern New York, on toward Worcester, the Massachusetts Hills in there, a little bit away from the big cities. But the big cities are going to have a major, major storm. And there may even be another one coming on Saturday and Sunday, another snow event in there. As
So much for global warming there, Joe.
Well, what happens is you see a lot of winters that are like this, where you get a warm front part and all of a sudden it rallies in March like this. And we've been waiting for this. As a matter of fact, I thought it was going to try to come back in February. It did for a while and then backed off completely. But now it's back again, at least for a while to come. So the thing I want to emphasize, Sean, is this is going to move really fast. All right.
Listen, I want to give everybody advice here. Now, look, take the storm seriously. Walk outside your home naked and don't put any clothes on and make flying angels in the snow and drive your car at 100 miles an hour. I mean, that's what everyone says during these storms, right? I mean, you watch local newscasts and they think everybody's stupid. You know, this is what it sounds like. Whatever you do, put a hat and gloves on. I'm like, oh, really? Please try and stay off the roads if you can. Oh, I was thinking of running out and doing donuts in the snow. Whatever you do, make sure you cover up. I'm like, oh, really? I thought I was going to do a naked snow angel. What are you talking about?
A naked snow angel in your ninja outfit, too. So that would be pretty
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everyone should take the storm seriously. Stock up on milk. By the way, everyone knows to stock up on milk and bread. The stores are empty.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a day or two that things are going to be shut down pretty good, especially once you get away from the coastal areas. And you'll have a day or two to recover. At this time of the year, it melts pretty quick. And then you got to look out for the weekend. I don't think that'll be nearly as big as this. But
yeah, thanks a lot. You always bring good news. So much for golf this weekend. I thought we'd play snowball golf. But anyway.
Well, if you had me on when the weather was sunny and pleasant, then I'd come on with nice news.
All right, Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com. Thank you, my friend.
All right, so, thanks for having me, Sean. Talk to you later.
All right, we always appreciate you being here. You know, the problem with the deep state, I want to get back to this here. You know, you have all this fake news out there, and the fake news Democratic media is now actually demanding the White House produce evidence showing that Trump Tower was wiretapped, and they've got to do it by the end of today or retract the president's claim that it ever happened. Now, okay, the evidence, let's go to the mainstream media. Let's go to their best friends in the press, because right out of their own reporting, quote, wiretaps, like the New York Times story, headline January 20th, wiretap data used in inquiry of Trump aides. But as long as, you know, if we're going to now set this arbitrary deadline for evidence, then maybe the Trump White House should start demanding that the fake news Democratic media, the destroy Trump media, produce evidence to support the allegation that Trump colluded with Russia to steal the election from Hillary, where there hasn't been a shred of evidence, not one bit, which is the entire basis for their Trump-Russiagate investigation. Because without the key element of the story, all the media has is completely innocent contacts between Trump aides and a Russian official, like in the case of Jeff Sessions, doing his job the same weekend Democratic senators were doing it. I mean, it's the hypocrisy is breathless. This weekend, Vladimir Putin's press secretary was saying Hillary Clinton's campaign met with the Russian ambassador and others. Well, are they going to investigate now the collusion with Hillary and Russia, now that they've discovered this new tidbit of information? Maybe after all the talk about Russia, Hillary should have disclosed that on her own. And the media freaking out that Attorney General Sessions asked for the resignation of these holdovers? Well, that's what Clinton did. And nobody puts it in perspective. Abraham Lincoln, for crying out loud, got rid of 75% of the government when he came in. And all you hear about is a team of rivals. So, you know, if that's the way it's going to work, let's do it that way. Without the key element of the story, the media is completely, you know, they're the ones that reported it. And Trump can just say, sorry, I made a mistake. I just read the New York Times and the New York Times said so. And if the New York Times says so, of course, it has to be right. After all, they are the paper of record in the country. You know, when is this? You know, I talked to some sources today. And what I've been told, and we've been doing the reporting, we've been following the reporting of John Solomon, AP veteran, 20 years, and Sarah Carter. Sarah Carter will be back on TV tonight. This is the fourth night in a row. Now, they're saying that there was a FISA warrant issued in October and another warrant issued. Okay, I've not been able to confirm it myself, but I think they're good reporters. I tend to believe it. But I have a source telling me that the FISA warrant that they're talking about had nothing to do with Donald Trump. That it was ancillary, that it was a sidebar. And that what happened when any time any, quote, issues involving Donald Trump colluding with the Russians came up, law enforcement was able to debunk it. Nobody wants to pay attention to their reporting. So the FISA warrant in October was not about Donald Trump. The FISA warning was about, so the New York Times is wrong, all these news sources are wrong. And, you know, so when is the media going to admit they're wrong? You know, when is NBC going to stop their cable channel with 24/7 conspiracy lies? When are they going to tell the country that there's no evidence of collusion? And by the way, who started this? This is a question that I think is going to be answered at some point. And when it happens, I have my deep suspicions where the fingerprints of the people responsible for the conspiracy begin. I'll hold it to myself for now. So with all their resources, the New York Times and Washington Post and BBC and McClatchy, and they were wrong from the get-go, because Sarah Carter and John Solomon are reporting that, and my sources are telling me, no, every time they looked into it, there was nothing there. Nothing. And I'm told we're going to hear a lot of news about this week, that there was nothing there, that there's no conspiracy, that there was no collusion, that there's no evidence. So it's getting pretty interesting here how this is beginning to unfold. But they're clueless, you know, just like they're clueless about how the president operates. If I had so much impact on the president's thinking, well, he would have fired every Obama holdover, because that's what I said in my monologue on TV. I never mentioned the U.S. attorneys. Not one time. And when I told him at one point early in the campaign, maybe it's a good idea you don't tweet anymore. Yeah, I really had a huge impact on his thinking. He really listens to me. He's his own man, and this is what they can't stand. And he makes his own decisions, and they don't like that either. And any suggestion to the contrary, like these networks all weekend long saying, well, he was probably doing it in response to Hannity's monologue. Hannity wasn't talking about the U.S. attorneys in that monologue. I was talking about the deep state intelligence leakers and the Obama holdovers. Anyway, it's just an outright lie, but I doubt I'm going to get a correction. I'm telling them the truth. Are they going to mention that Donald? Here's a headline. Donald Trump, during the campaign, Hannity suggested it may be a good idea to stop tweeting, and Donald Trump paid so much attention to Sean Hannity. That's how much he takes my advice to heart. It's just unbelievable. Now, the other thing about this is, and we'll get into this in a lot more detail tonight. By the way, Democrats are threatening to shut down the government over Trump's border wall. Politico is reporting. And Chuck Schumer is warning McConnell not to include money for a border wall with Mexico in a must-pass government funding bill next. Good. Shut the government down. I'm all for it. Shut it down. The whole thing. Get rid of it. But there is a real threat to the president. And that threat is in the intelligence community. And while I have deep respect for the bravery, courage, and good work that many in the intelligence community, those that are leaking are hurting this country. They've got to be discovered and charged with the crimes they've committed. As for Obama holdovers, get rid of all of them. Yeah, I'm calling for a purge. There you go. So if Donald Trump fires every Obama holdover tomorrow, don't forget to give me credit on all your shows tonight or tomorrow when the news happens. This is beyond stupid. They are beyond ignorant. By the way, Kellyanne Conway has said that Trump is negotiating changes to the House Obamacare bill. That's good news. Paul Ryan warning of a bloodbath if Ryan Care isn't passed. I mean, well, the legislative process calls for amendments. And that's about it. 800-941-SHAWN is our number as we continue from D.C. When we come back, Newt Gingrich will join us on this very topic.
Sean's got more behind-the-scenes information. More contacts than anybody. More friends behind the curtain. Sean Hannity is on. Sean Hannity is on.
Certainly, the president has the opportunity and the right to fire U.S. attorneys. But I wonder, George, just not very long ago, the president was saying that he was going to keep the U.S. attorney there in New York. And then suddenly he's changed his mind. I'm just curious as to why that is. And certainly there's a lot of questions coming up as to whether President Trump is concerned about the jurisdiction of this U.S. attorney and whether that might affect his future. When you look at everything, George, surrounding the investigations, there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. But again, the president does have that prerogative.
Janet Reno fired every holdover Republican U.S. attorney all across the country.
I have asked for their resignations at the request of the president.
All 93 U.S. attorneys, a one-day clean sweep. Presidents do replace the other party's appointees, but usually not wholesale.
She can handle things.
It's important that we build a team that reflects our desire to have a Justice Department marked by excellence, marked by diversity, marked by professionalism and integrity. I want teamwork where we're both interested in achieving justice throughout America.
On Friday, the Attorney General asked for resignation letters from all 46 federal prosecutors who were Obama-era holdovers. Barrera refused. "I didn't resign," he tweeted Saturday. "Moments ago, I was fired." But ABC News has learned there were crossed signals. Sources say Barrera received a voicemail Thursday from the White House asking him to call back and speak with the president. No reason given. Barrera believed speaking with the president would violate DOJ protocols. So he contacted the Attorney General's office instead and told the White House he could not speak with the president. The White House declined to comment on the phone call. Sessions' decision to clean house comes one day after Trump loyalist Sean Hannity called for a purge.
"For weeks, we've been warning you about the deep state Obama holdover government bureaucrats who are hell-bent on destroying this president, President Trump. Tonight, it's time for the Trump administration to begin to purge these saboteurs before it's too late."
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity show. Yeah, it's Sean Hannity's fault. It's all my fault. I said purge all of the U.S. attorneys, which I didn't even mention specifically by name ever. I just talked about the deep state, those that are leaking against the president, which is pretty unprecedented in a lot of these cases. And yeah, the Obama holdovers, it's pretty transparent, are pretty hell-bent, as well as the media, the alt-left propaganda destroy Trump media to hurt the president every single day, including advancing narratives that have been false about collusion with Russia and the new information that I found today. Anyway, here to weigh in on this and much more is former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. And, you know, Preet Bharara, the only reason I heard that he was even going to stay on was as a favor to Chuck Schumer and as an olive branch to Chuck Schumer by the president, because Chuck Schumer's friends with him, wanted him in that position. But then Chuck Schumer went snowflake left and has been totally, completely, utterly incapable of any compromise. So I guess the president said, forget it.
Well, I mean, I can't tell you the details there. I was impressed Friday. I happened to be in the White House for some other business, and I didn't realize how powerful you were. I mean, you know,
do you really have to stick it to me? Do you, all weekend long, everyone's advancing their conspiracy that I did this.
You have one passing monologue, and 46 U.S. attorneys are gone.
Yeah, that's the power of Hannity, right? That's so funny.
That's pretty cool. I'm glad you're my friend.
Well, you don't know who I'm going to put in their place, as if I would have any say in any of this anyway. You know, I'll tell you a story that I can tell you is not true. And I tweeted out this weekend, I said, Donald Trump's his own man. He makes his own decisions. It's so funny. People just don't want to understand him. There was a point early in the campaign, I, like others, said, do you really want to keep tweeting? He doesn't. He follows his own gut. People tell him things. That doesn't mean he's going to listen. He decides on his own. That's the type of person he is. There's a great example. I would say to him, you know, do you really want to keep on tweeting? You're getting a lot of brushback on this. And he didn't listen to me or the many millions of others that told him not to do it, right?
Well,
I think probably you were
including
one.
Including me. I always tell people he's pretty good at listening but very bad at obeying.
Good for him. Do you want a president that obeys?
No, that's part of why he is who he is. But in addition, I think he does have an inner ear where he listens to an amazing number of people, and then something hits and it sounds right. And in this case, by the way, this is not some great shock, but about the same point in 1993, the Attorney General Reno fired everybody in one day. I think it was 92
93 people. Yep. Yeah.
And, of course, at the time, we Republicans were deeply shocked that she did that, just as the Democrats now are deeply shocked. Yeah. But, in fact, it's a legitimate part of the business. I told you the other day that Lincoln fired 70% of the senior bureaucracy when he took over.
1,195 out of 1,500-plus.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But he had to do it because he needed loyalists who were prepared to fight a civil war. And he knew if he kept Southern sympathizers in the federal government that they would guarantee the loss of the war. So I think Trump is coming to realize that the deep state does exist. If you just look at the donation numbers, which you heard me talk about, 95% of all federal government employee donations went to Clinton, 97% at Justice, 99% at State. And I just tell people, what do you think it would be like to be in a place where 99 out of every $100 went to one candidate? I mean, do you think there might be a cultural bias in the room?
There's a huge bias. It's very, very interesting. So I think at some point, based on some things that I know, we're going to see how I can't say with 100% and with 100% certainty, but I think we're going to begin to understand more deeply, let me put it that way, where this Russia collusion conspiracy theory that has been advanced by the media started. And we're beginning to get more and more light shed on the whole story about FISA and surveillance and the New York Times claiming and the Washington Post and their leaks and reports and the BBC and McClatchy that Trump was wiretapped. Remember, they said that, and then the president tweeted out, really? Well, if the New York Times says it, I guess it's true. But what I'm hearing from very good sources today is that, in fact, the FISA, the October FISA warrant was not about Trump. And slightly way off to the periphery, if things came up that mentioned Trump, they were all investigated. And the bigger part of the story is they were all debunked, and they moved on very quickly, as John Solomon and Sarah Carter have been reporting.
I think that's probably right. And I think, this tells you a lot about how Washington and New York and the news media work. They get a story which is not really a story, but it's a story about a story. I heard that somebody might somewhere think that blue is the next color. And then that becomes, have you heard that they're beginning to investigate blue? And then that becomes, I wonder what evil thing blue did that they're worthy of investigation. And then the question becomes, now, are you going to defend blue with all the evil stuff they've done? Now, if you notice, there's not a single fact in that entire sequence. Not one fact. And that's what we went through.
Yeah, that's what we're going through.
I'm in the middle of writing Understanding Trump, which is really fascinating. And I'm going to get you the first copy. No, I'm going to get you the second copy. I'm getting the president the first copy. But it's interesting to go back and put this stuff together because, when you look, for example, at the New York Times story about the woman that Trump was so bad about, who promptly repudiates him, she says, this story is totally untrue. I told the New York Times this story was not true. He was a gentleman. He was a nice guy. I like him. And you find yourself sitting there thinking, how could they be that totally wrong? And then you get this whole story, which I think really the intelligence committees ought to dig into, because it is it's a comment on the growing incompetence of the American intelligence services, that they had this report that a specific person had gone to Prague to meet with the Russians. And this thing was around for months. And all these people were talking about it and gossiping about it, and, oh, my God, what does it mean? Well, then it turns out that there are two people with the same name. On a worldwide basis, that's not a big
You're talking about my friend Michael Cohn. And by the way,
exactly.
A pretty common name.
Yeah. And Michael, it turned out, had never been in the Czech Republic, ever.
No, not one time.
And so you have to say to yourself, okay, could they have picked up the phone and called? And
well, said, it's funny you say this, because after all of the nonstop, I just assumed at some point, if there was anything real to this, we would have had it by now, considering it's March, and I know we're still in the wintertime, but November 8th passed a long, long time ago, and there are entire networks building themselves up on one story, and this is this phony Russia story. And so I just decided to do some digging myself, and it didn't take a whole lot of effort to confirm that well, in the course of different investigations that, yeah, the Trump, quote, collusion question came up. And then when they looked at it, it was debunked in about 15 seconds. And then they moved back to what they were doing. So nice. But if you can hang on there, Mr. Speaker, I got to take a quick break here. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program.
Putting America and Americans first. Now there's a novel idea. You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
Everybody wants to compare this to Obamacare as if they can keep these guarantees going, as if we're going to have Obamacare plans and we're just going to finance it a different way. This is repealing and replacing Obamacare. So this first part is very, very important. It repeals the entire fiscal pieces of the law and replaces it with patient-centered system. And the point is, a lot of people who you just mentioned, I think they'd like to see us continue to make Americans buy what we say they should buy. We don't agree with
that. But these are critics of yours coming from the conservative side.
Look, when you're a governing party getting consensus among your wide Big Ten party, everybody doesn't get what they want. But we're getting much better policy here. You said keeping his promise. He has promised a lot for this legislation. He said everybody will be covered. He said costs will go down. You will be able to pick your doctor. Even in company insurance plans, you can't pick your doctor. There are limits on that. He said that you'll be able to pick whatever plan you want. He's overpromising. You can't do all that.
Look, here's their point.
But you agree. He's overpromising.
Well, I can't speak to all of those. I don't know exactly all that he said.
He said we will repeal and replace Obamacare with a better system, one that gives people better access to more affordable choices, and you pick what you want. We're not going to have that. Read his speech that he gave to Congress just a few weeks ago. That speech perfectly encapsulized what we are achieving here.
The president has said there will be a bloodbath in 2018 if this isn't passed through the House and Senate.
I do believe that if we don't keep our word to the people who sent us here, yeah. Look, the most important thing for a person like myself who runs for office and tells the people we're asking to hire us, this is what I'll do if I get elected. And then if you don't do that, you're breaking your word.
All right, as we continue, final moments with former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. So, all right, Paul Ryan is going to be a bloodbath if they don't repeal and replace Obamacare. Look, you're a former speaker. Maybe I have a different perspective. But if the Club for Growth, Americans for Prosperity, Cato, Heritage Action, Freedom Works, the Freedom Caucus, some in the study group, and then Senators Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Marco Rubio are all against the bill that you're about to roll out. Wouldn't it be better to get it right before you roll it out?
Well, I think it might have been, although, again, you and I just have a slightly different perspective, because I actually believe in the legislative process. I mean, they've taken a first run at it. They're going to find out in the next week whether they have the votes. If they don't have the votes, they're going to have to go to some amendments. That's exactly what the process ought to be. When they will, I think, in the end, get it through the House. When they get it through the House, they're going to have a very tough road in the Senate, and Senator McConnell has a really difficult job. He can only afford to lose two senators. Any more than that, and it's dead. So he's going to have to bring all of his skill to bear trying to find out what is the bill. You know, look, I know if you are committed to ideas, and certainly you and I both share a passion about ideas. If you're committed to ideas, it gets very frustrating to watch a free society because all these egos, all these interests, all these various approaches come to bear in a way that's sloppy and inelegant, you know, what they talk about as making sausage. But I think this may be an important step. I also believe you're going to have Tom Price sitting down as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, meeting with a lot of conservative groups, figuring out what we can do to improve the repeal of Obamacare through regulatory action, because remember, they are very constrained by the Senate reconciliation rules. I think it's a really stupid way to govern, but then I'm a member of the House, and all House members are skeptical of the Senate. So the Senate rules really create a very narrow strangle point of what can and cannot be in the bill, and that's made it 10 times harder. The upside is that particular bill you can get through with only 50 votes plus the vice president. You
don't and it's a three-phase process. Look, I just hope they get it right. If they screw it up, it's going to be a monumental failure.
It is going to be a really bad problem if they can't get it done. But I am going to remain your optimistic friend, believing it can get done.
All right, Mr. Speaker, thank you as always for being with us. We appreciate
it.
And we'll see you on TV tonight from Washington. We're in D.C. tonight. 800-941-SHAWN, our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. We'll have more on this and why is the process so difficult with the House Ways and Means Committee Chairman, Kevin Brady. Congressman Brady will join us at the top of the next hour. We'll get to your calls coming up next from Washington, D.C.
Well, it's important because there are people who are saying about President Trump's claim, oh, it could never happen. Well, frankly, it happened to me. And I had proof because the Washington Times actually let me listen into a tape that was made of a conversation in my congressional office. It was a conversation between myself and a foreign leader. The conversation was approved and cleared by House attorneys who said, yes, you can do that. That's your constitutional right. But someone had intercepted it. And I learned about it 2 years after I left office. Members of Congress ought to be aware that my experience was that my phone wasn't safe in a congressional office. Now, if they can do that to a member of Congress, they can certainly do it to a presidential candidate, and they can do it to a private citizens as well. Hello, America.
Did the Russian government have any collaboration or serious communication back and forth with Donald Trump's campaign during the election campaign last year?
The answer is very simple, no. And the fact that Russia is being demonized in that sense comes very strange to us. And we are really sorry about that, because the whole situation takes us away from the perspective of getting our relationship to a better condition. We faced a situation when Russia all of a sudden became, a nightmare for the United States. And we sincerely cannot understand why American people and American politicians started the process of self-humiliation. You are self-humiliating yourself, saying that a country can intervene in your election process. America, a huge country, country number one, the most powerful country in the world, with a very, very stable political traditions, and you say that a country can easily intervene and easily influence your electoral process. This is simply impossible. This is simply impossible. And when it comes to Russia, I can tell you that we never had, we do not have, and we will not have any intention to interfere in someone's domestic affairs, especially in America's domestic affairs.
Did he have similar meetings with Clinton campaign officials? Because I don't know of any.
Well, if you look at some people connected with Hillary Clinton during her campaign, you would probably see that he had lots of meetings of that kind. But there were no meetings about electoral process. There was in no way it should be perceived as interference in electoral process. There are lots of specialists in politology, people working in think tanks, advising Hillary or advising people working for Hillary. So if you look at it with intention to demonize Russia, you would probably see that, yes, he was trying to interfere in Hillary's activities. But it would be nonsense, because this is not true.
All right, glad you're with us. 24 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. This just gets funnier and funnier, but it's really more twisted and twisted than it's ever been. And that was an interview this weekend with Putin's press secretary, saying, yeah, you may want to look that members of Hillary's campaign were meeting with the Russian ambassador, too. I wonder if Hillary's going to make that big a deal over it, or where is the outrage from the alt-left propaganda destroy Trump by any means necessary media? Where is the outrage? You know, why didn't the Clintons, as all of this now has been discussed for months about Donald Trump, why didn't they disclose this? When did they meet? What was the meeting about? Were they colluding in this campaign? And then you got the mainstream media freaking out that Attorney General Sessions has asked for the resignation of Obama holdovers. Well, that's exactly the 93 people, attorneys that were fired by Bill Clinton. Nobody seems to remember that. They don't seem to care a whole hell of a lot about that. And on top of that, there is a deep state that I talk about. There is. So what I've been doing behind the scenes, I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this. And we spent a lot of time last week, both on radio and TV, talking to John Solomon and Sarah Carter. And what they're saying is, yeah, there was a FISA warrant in October. But after doing even a deeper dig on my own, it doesn't seem in any way related to Trump. What it seems related to is unrelated. It just seems that the whole thing, it was made up of whole cloth by the New York Times and BBC and McClatchy and everybody else. But the more important aspect of the Carter and Solomon read is the fact that, well, in spite of all of their investigative work, there's no there. There was no collusion. And even after it was looked at as a periphery issue in terms of whatever investigations were going on, it didn't happen. So, you know, if the FISA October warrant was not about Donald Trump or his campaign, but it only came up on the periphery, as they say in that article, you know, when any issue of so-called collusion was made and they looked into it, it was debunked. You know, so when's the New York Times, the destroy Trump media, going to admit they were wrong? When are they going to tell the American people, like Sarah Carter and John Solomon are reporting, that there's no evidence of collusion? Not one person. You've got a whole network now that is dedicated almost 24/7 to this phony collusion story. Now, if evidence comes out that shows that there was, okay, I'm willing to look at it. But as of now, none exists. As of today, there's nothing. And I'm being told it was investigated and there was nothing. And I'm being told with people of pretty high access. So with all the resources that these big media companies have, you would think that they would have some level of responsibility. Well, Donald Trump tweeted out that there was wiretapping. Okay. Well, maybe the server was, at least according to John Solomon and Sarah Carter, but it's fairly irrelevant if they haven't come up with anything. Only question is, why would they be looking into the server of a opposition candidate in the middle of a presidential election? That's what I don't understand. Now, in fact, if they weren't, that wasn't the main cause or the main purpose of it. Hopefully we'll one day get to the bottom of this. And if they did look into it and they found nothing, then why is everybody in the media still talking about it? And when are they going to admit that they were wrong? And when are they going to admit they said first, before Donald Trump, that there was wiretapping going on? And if there's not wiretapping that was going on, well, is the New York Times going to put it on page A1, top of the fold? I doubt it. I doubt they'll even recognize it. Just like they wouldn't recognize their collusion with Hillary Clinton's campaign. Just like they can't even recognize the shock and trauma that they're still suffering under, because they can't accept that they couldn't see any of this coming, meaning Trump's win. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. Patrick is in Panama City in Florida. Patrick, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hey, doing great, Sean. Last week for me was a really, really difficult week. It seemed like I was putting the fire out every single day on the job, but working in construction. So you've been there. You know what
I'm talking
about.
By the way, man, I'm having those weeks every week now. It's like news breaks every second. Staying on top of this is now way beyond four full-time jobs. I know what you – listen, you know, gulping water is something we all experience. I get it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to fight off liberals every day. But so I get to the end of the week. It's Friday. I hop in the truck, and I almost didn't want to turn on the radio. I'm thinking, Sean's going to have some goofball liberal on, and I'm already not in a great mood. But, of course, I turn the radio on, and first thing I hear is this liberal feminist. I'm like, oh, great. But then I hear this lady, D.C. McAllister. And I'm like, whoa, who is this? So smart and articulate, and obviously a strong-minded woman. It was fantastic. I wish there were a lot more women like her. It totally, completely changed my attitude for the day. I had a happy Friday and a great weekend just off of that alone. So thanks
you
got to
remember, if you're in a bad mood and you've been gulping water all week, don't forget our final half hour on a Friday. We have the Florida-Georgia Line Friday concert series to get you in a good mood. So, I mean, you have no excuse for not being here on Fridays. We purposely do that so that, you know, you can put your hands up and shoot some bullets at the moon and have a little fun and get the party started and pass a little round, you know, so a little Kentucky Clear or something. But in all seriousness, look, we love D.C. on this program. We love all our guests on this program, even the people we disagree with. You know, the last thing I want to do as a host is piss off those people that are listening. These debates, though, are so important for this country. We've got to get this right. If we don't get health care right, we're not going to get anything right. We don't get the economy right. That means it's going to impact this country. We're going to be in a slog for generations. It's going to suck. And if you think things are bad now because you're gulping water, maybe a worst case scenario is you're not gulping water and you're not working and you're dying to get another project to be on. You know, I'll never forget when my years in construction, what shocked me the most is I remember going from at one point, you know, being 6 months in advance to be able to book me. And then one slower period, it's like I'm just keeping my head above water. And it's tough. There's an ebb and flow to the economic cycle that is not fun for those that are working hard for a living and in business.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Sean. And, you know, like I said, you've been there, so you get what I'm saying. But thankfully for me and my area, good times right now. And with the Donald Trump presidency, I see that continuing.
All right, my friend. What kind of work, what kind of contractor are you, Patrick?
Flooring. I do tile. You've been there.
Hey, listen, I you know what? I've never understood the guys that kick rugs. I don't know how they do that without, you know, every one of them, they have water on their knee by the time they're 35. One of the hardest jobs is all day being on your hands and knees on tile. It hurts after a while. And do you do a lot of floating? Do you float the floors or do you put down the board?
Yeah, I do. I do float work, mud work, substrates. Anything involving tile, walls, and floors.
Yeah, I've done it all. I'm sure I'm not as skilled as you, but I actually like tile work more than almost anything else I did because I really love to lay out a perfect room, and it's all in the layout to make it work, to make it look good. And floating a floor when you get it perfectly flat, there's nothing better than laying tile on that. So anyway,
absolutely.
What's the name of your business?
What's that?
What's the name of your business? We'll plug it.
Oh, it's Patrick's Tile Pros.
Patrick's Tile Pros in Panama City. All right, Patrick. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you calling in. 800-941-SEAN.
Final hour roundup is next. You do not want to miss it. And stay tuned for the final hour free-for-all on the Sean Hannity Show.
As we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. All right, Sylvia is in Texas. Sylvia, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. I am so frustrated about this so-called repeal and replace bill. It keeps the Medicaid expansion, and it even expands it more over the next 3 years. It keeps some of our tax increases. The price isn't going to go down, and our deductibles are going to stay high because those insurance regulations are still there. And, you know, the thing to remember is health insurance is not health care, as we've discovered with Obamacare. And the sad thing is the Republicans are going to own this failed monstrosity. And, you know, we've got this huge opportunity. We've got reconciliation. We just need Republicans. And, you know, we saw how fearless the Democrats were. We need to be fearless like them and just push through a full repeal and then, step by step, put the consumers and the doctors back in charge of their health care.
Listen, I'm spending a lot of time today going over all of this and telling people that there are a ton of other ways to thread this needle and get this thing done and get it done using the free markets and getting government off our back and letting doctors also make a little bit of a profit and letting, you know, health insurers compete for our business. And the way they're going to get our business is offering the best services at the best prices.
Absolutely. You know, 15 months ago, the Republicans pushed to put it right through with reconciliation. They need to put their vote where their campaign promise is, and they need to honor their commitment to us, to we the voters, and then they can have a two-year delayed transition to work through all the details, but they need to repeal this monstrosity, this horrible law. And like you said, more people will be able to afford insurance. The free market's going to let competition drive the cost down, and less people will need help to pay for it because they can afford it. Our taxes will go down. We'll have more freedom, and we'll be able to unleash the free market. It's what we need to do.
All right. Good call, Sylvia. We really appreciate you being with us. 800-941. Sean, we got time for 1 minute here for Karen in Brandon, Florida. What's up, Karen? How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for this opportunity you give us to share. If I don't get the repeal, this is where Donald Trump loses me. I don't understand why we would keep it. If there's ever another Democrat in office, they could just ramp it right back up. There's no excuse. They've run on it for years. They've done it. You go to Paul Ryan's page and he brags about it in January of last year, but now he's confused. They have to repeal Obamacare.
I think the president gave us the confidence that we're going to get there. I know that there are, I mean, the president had a listening session. He's been meeting with the Freedom Caucus members. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiations going on. They're trying to get to consensus. My hope would have been they did it the opposite way. Before they unveil it or roll it out, they do it first and get it as near as right as they possibly can and then, you know, get everybody on board and then release it. But, you know, with that said, I get it. Nobody seems to think that's possible in Washington, but that's the way the rest of us work in life. That's the way the real world works. You know, if I'm having a problem with a business deal, I don't write the contract, sign the contract, and then say, okay, let's work out the differences. I negotiate the differences, get it worked out, and then write the contract. So, you know, it's so typical, isn't it? Washington does everything ass backwards. Anyway, Karen, good call. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. News Roundup. Information Overload is coming up in the next hour. Hannity tonight, 10 Eastern. We have our friend Pat Buchanan is going to weigh in on the alt-left Russia hypocrisy nonsense and new information that we have on the program. Sarah Carter will also join us. Dr. Umber, who has a great idea for health care. Geraldo and Monica Crowley on Senators Lindsey Graham and John McCain. And did you see the new video by Snoop Dogg depicting the president as a clown and showing Snoop Dogg putting a gun to the clown's head? I wonder what would have happened if somebody did that with Obama. Yeah, I think we know the answer. We'll continue.
Does is it takes power out of Washington, takes power out of the bureaucracy, and puts it back to doctors and patients where it belongs.
The promise was very clear. We're going to repeal Obamacare. President Trump ran on, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And we all voted on a full repeal of Obamacare. And all Republicans voted yes in the House and the Senate a year ago. And so now the voters are just learning what's going on. And it turns out we're not going to repeal Obamacare.
I think we're moving a little bit too quickly on health care reform. This is a big issue. We're going to live with health care reform that we passed forever.
This plan says we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to keep the Obamacare taxes in place. It says we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to take the Medicaid expansion and extend it. And it also says we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to keep in place this mandate in a different form.
Lower costs, more competition, more choice. And most importantly, get Washington out of the business of being a nanny state, of micromanaging and running healthcare into the ground. Get it back to patients, get it back to doctors, get it back to states. That's what this does. This is monumental, exciting conservative reform. I've been working on this for 20 years. This is exciting. This is what we've been dreaming about doing, and we know it's going to make a positive difference in people's lives in this country.
I think amidst the horse excrement, we can find a pony around here somewhere.
This is the Obamacare replacement plan that everyone has been asking for. It's also a culmination of years of dedicated work and careful thought by Republicans to find a replacement that will best undo the damage that's been caused by Obamacare while ensuring that all Americans have peace of mind during this stable transition period. These are the principles for which conservatives have been fighting for years.
Our job is to do what we told the voters we're going to do. In my judgment, looking at the document, reading the document, this does not do what we told the voters we were going to do and what they elected us to do, what they sent us here to do, for goodness sake. We had an election in 2010, 2014, 2016 where this was a central issue, and every one of those times we said we were going to repeal it.
You said you have no doubt that you will get the 218 votes necessary to pass this bill. What gives you that certainty? What are you seeing on the ground?
I have no doubt we'll pass this because we're going to keep our promises. Every House Republican, every Republican in Congress made a promise to the American people. And the promise we made to the American people is we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. Because we made that promise, I am confident we're going to make good on that promise.
There is not 218 votes today. We had a meeting last night, and I can tell you, I don't know that there's 218 votes of consensus around any bill today.
The House plan is Obamacare light, keeps subsidies, keeps taxes, actually keeps an individual mandate, and bails out the insurance companies.
I like Rand, but I think he's looking for a publicity stunt here. What's happening is the committees of jurisdiction are drafting legislation and getting feedback from their members. That's exactly how legislation is supposed to be written. The things he described are just not accurate.
All right, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour here on the Sean Hannity Show from Washington, D.C. today. It feels like we're living here at least one or two days a week, which is fairly unprecedented. And I had a dinner to go to tonight that I now have to cancel because of the snow. They're expecting up to 18 inches, a nor'easter going up the eastern seaboard. So I'm getting out of here before I get stuck here. That would be worse than anything I can imagine. I can't stand it here, to be perfectly frank. All right, so you hear all the criticism, and we're back into the process now. I personally, as I was asking Speaker Gingrich in the last half hour, I don't know why, knowing that there was going to be criticism from all of these smart think tanks like Cato and Heritage Action and Club for Growth and Americans for Prosperity and Freedom Works, and then the Freedom Caucus being so staunchly against the bill. And then Senators Paul and Cruz and Lee and Rubio, I'm not sure why it was rolled out without building more consensus instead of having this very public fight. Maybe one of the reasons it happened is because of the reconciliation process. Here to shed some light on all of this is Chairman Kevin Brady. He's with the House Ways and Means Committee. And, sir, how are you? Welcome back to the program, and it's always an honor to have you back on.
Hey, Sean, it's good to be here, and I think you're smart to get out of Washington, D.C. for any excuse whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't even like to come here, but I mean, it's nice to be invited to something, and it was pretty important what I wanted to do, but unfortunately, yeah. I just couldn't make it. But so here's my question. You see what's going on. You've got, I'll give you an example. Last week, I had Rand Paul on at 4 o'clock, then I had Paul Ryan on at 4:30, and it's like two ships passing in the night contradicting each other. You know, one says it's full repeal. One says it's not full repeal. One says some taxes stay and they're renamed. The other says it doesn't stay and is not renamed. You know, one says complete repeal, not complete repeal. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it, and hopefully that's what you can do. And more importantly, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to make sure that this bill works, that the Republicans don't have this public fight, and more importantly, that the American people get the health care they deserve.
Yep. Look, I think we're on the same page here. In fact, I keep saying this over and over. I think as we look at the principles in this and the design, we as conservatives and Republicans, we have far more in common on this than what divides us. And here's what always tends to split us. It's not the principles. It's the strategy. You know, we're pushing ahead in the House knowing that this bill is going to the president's desk. And so because we want to repeal everything we can in Obamacare and start to restore state control and free market, we're proposing to shove all of that into this bill, or at least as much as we can, because we know it's going to become law. The other strategy is, look, just repeal what you can now and then come back and with Democrat support, try to do a bigger replacement bill. But there's flaws in that thinking, obviously, because I don't think there's going to be a single Democrat that's going to help with the replacement, especially if you put all your eggs in that basket. So, John, I really think the principles and design, they're pretty close to each other. It's the strategy that right now has got everyone sort of knocking each other around.
Do you think it would have been better if before you had a rollout, what if some of these things could have been worked out behind closed doors with all the differing warring factions now and gotten to consensus and then have the president announce with every Republican senator and every Republican congressman that this is our deal?
Well, I wish it could have. One of our challenges is, you know, we got to get around the filibuster in the Senate, and because if we wait for 60 votes, this will never happen. And the Senate rules are so vague, Sean, and it's never clear. And so we're trying to, as I always say, we're trying to shove 20 pounds of conservative reform in a 5-pound bucket here to get it through the Senate. It's not always clear what the rules are. So I think that that's been part of this big challenge, is knowing with some certainty what we can get through the Senate. And for that, we just have to rely on our Senate Republicans.
Well, I understand the reconciliation process. I understand that the Democrats are in a total obstruction mode. I understand that makes it far more complicated. When I interviewed Health and Human Services Secretary Price, he was telling me that this is all going to happen in three different phases. But at the end of the day, if you're passing a bill and you don't have the support of the Freedom Caucus, that means I can tell you that every conservative that I know, and you don't have the support of those conservative groups, they're going to be so angry, I don't even think words can describe it.
Yeah, and Sean, I think at the end of the day, there will be support. I know on the Ways and Means Committee, for example, most of our members are House conservatives or in the Freedom Caucus. They voted unanimously for this, same on energy and commerce. And I think there's going to be changes in the timing of Medicaid, you know, and the expansion, how they deal with that. There may be some changes in the tax credit as well. That's where I'm working with our House conservatives, make sure we've got that as tight as we want it to be. And so I think there's still some opportunity for some improvements here and for the chance for us to come together. I'm actually, despite all the media hoopla, I'm pretty optimistic this can get done and get done this month.
Don't you think it looks bad for Republicans to be fighting in public like this?
I do. In fact, I don't think the differences, frankly, are so great to be doing this publicly.
Have you talked to the Freedom Caucus guys? Have you been able to persuade any of them that you're going in the right direction? Or are they going to have to wait till the amendment process comes up? And then when the House passes its bill and the Senate passes their bill, and then you got to reconcile those two bills, it's going to be another big fight.
Well, I hope we can solve as much of this now before we move it out of the House. If the Senate Republicans can do more, like last year, 2015, when we got that bill to the president's desk to repeal and defund Planned Parenthood as well, Senate Republicans actually helped us and made some improvements over there. And so, look, let's get everything we can through the House. If Senate Republicans can improve it even more so, that would be better, because we want to go as bold on the repeal and as free market and state control as we can on the replacement.
Yeah, well, I just want to make sure, is this going to include health savings accounts? Is it going to include cooperatives? Like, I keep talking about this guy in Wichita, Kansas, where every child only pays $10 a month, every adult $50 a month. It includes everything. He negotiated directly with the pharmaceutical companies at a 95% discount, dispenses it directly to the patients. And if one of his patients wants to get out of catastrophic care, if, God forbid, they get cancer, have a bad accident or a heart attack, they can do that too.
That's the way health care should work. So the answer to the first is we double the size of the health savings accounts and make them more user-friendly for people. That's really key. And secondly, we take control out of Washington. We give it to the state, so every plan that a state wants to approve that's designed for their communities, their families, that school in that situation is available for that tax credit to be used. So, and that reason we're pushing so hard for that to occur now in this bill is because states are going to need some time to get engaged in the free market. Frankly, we're repairing a pretty damaged free market. It's going to take a little time.
What about all these governors like John Kasich that are whining and complaining that they think they're going to lose some of their Medicaid funding? And is Jim Jordan, he was on Fox earlier today, and I'm sorry, on Fox on Sunday, and Jim Jordan was saying that there's a new entitlement in this bill. Who's right, Paul Ryan or Jim Jordan?
Yeah, I think I'm absolutely convinced Paul Ryan is right here, because these tax credits are simply the same health care break you and I get who work for a bigger company. We're just allowing small businesses and their workers to get the same help. And on the other issue, look, the more state control we give, the sooner the better. My frustration is we do have Republican governors who want a lot more spending in this bill. and most of us as conservatives want to go. And so I think the sooner we are able to trim the dollars on here while being fair, the better.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Chairman, if you can stay right there.
Ready to repeal and replace Obama's executive orders? Then you've come to the right place. The Sean Hannity Show.
There's no new entitlement.
It's not refundable tax credits. That's not an entitlement?
No, that's not an entitlement. Letting people keep more of their own money and doing what they want with it is not an entitlement.
And why are they calling it that?
It's a darn good question.
This plan has some Medicaid expansion in it to a form, although you cap it in certain respects. This plan has tax credits, another name for a subsidy. It's made some on the right say, you know what, this is Obamacare light. You're essentially accepting the architecture, but just trying to remodel the building. What say you?
No, absolutely not. In fact, this is a little puzzling because independents and conservatives for decades have said, shouldn't we equalize the tax treatment of the purchase of health coverage for folks who get it through their employer and folks who aren't able to get it through their employer? And that's exactly what the tax credits do. We don't dictate to people what they ought to buy or what they must buy. Mm-hmm. What we do is say, here's an opportunity for you to use a tax benefit that the 175 million individuals that are getting their coverage from their employer, those folks have a tax benefit. It's the moms and the pops out there. It's the person who's working at the corner grocery or the corner cleaners.
Should those folks have a tax benefit, or should people like you and me have to pay taxes on those health insurance benefits?
If part of our society has a tax benefit for the purchase of health coverage, then I'm of the belief, and the president is of the belief, that it needs to be fair for everybody. And that's the kind of system that we're looking for. And you've got to have a tax credit.
So that's why you want a tax credit, but you're not going to get that revenue from upper income folks who get generous health insurance policies from their company?
Well, that's another system that's been in place. As I say, 175 million folks are getting their coverage through their employer right now. And that's a debate that we ought to have. But the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the American people support making it equal for individuals who are getting it from their employer and not getting it from their employer. They're out there in the individual and small group market, which has literally been destroyed by the ACA. And that's what we're trying to reconstitute. That's what will reinvigorate the insurance market, but it'll also drive down costs because you'll have competition and transparency in the system.
All right, we now continue with the House Ways and Means Committee Chairman, that's Kevin Brady, as we continue to talk about health care. What do you think it's going to mean for the average person in this country, the average health care consumer? And how do you answer the charge? How do you answer the charge that, well, there are going to be people that are uninsured now? And that'll be my last question.
You know, I just I'm sitting here with my family and actually having this same discussion, eating chicken nuggets at a place. And bottom line, I told my wife, she said, so why will the CBO numbers probably be bad? And the answer is because we're not forcing Americans to buy plans they don't want or can't afford. They will have, if they don't get health care at work or if they don't get it in a government program, they're a small business person, they can take this credit and buy a plan that's right for them, whether they're young and healthy or they got a full family or they're 60 years old, they can buy a plan that's right for them, not what's right for Washington. And that's why, at the end of the day, this Republican plan will work better than CBO scores, better than all the national media will hammer us about. It's about freedom to buy plans that are right for you and to not buy plans, by the way, if that's your choice.
All right. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Kevin Brady. Congressman, good to talk to you. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Sean.
And I wish this wasn't so public. All right, quick break. Right back, and we will continue.
Sean gets the answers no one else does. America deserves to know the truth about Congress.
The House bill to repeal and replace Obamacare will provide you and your fellow citizens with more choices, far more choices, at lower cost. Americans should pick the plan they want. Now they'll be able to pick the plan they want. They'll be able to pick the doctor they want. They'll be able to do a lot of things that the other plan was supposed to give and never gave. You don't pick your doctor, you don't pick your plan, you remember that one. We're not going to have one size fits all. Instead, we're going to be working to unleash the power of the private marketplace to let insurers come in and compete for your business. And you'll see rates go down, 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 and you'll see plans go up, up, up. You'll have a lot of choices. You'll have plans that nobody's even thinking of today. They will have plans that today nobody has even thought about, because the market's going to enforce that with millions and millions of people wanting health care. More competition and less regulation will finally bring down the cost of care, and I think it'll bring it down very significantly. Unfortunately, it takes a while to get there because you have to let that marketplace kick in, and it's going to take a little while to get there. Once it does, it's going to be a thing of beauty. I wish it didn't take a year and 2 years, but that's what's going to happen, and that's the way it works. But we're willing to go through that process. Working together, we'll get the job done. The press is making Obamacare look so good all of a sudden. I'm watching the news. Looks so good. They're showing these reports about this one gets so much and this one gets so much. First of all, it covers very few people, and it's imploding. And 17 will be the worst year. And I said it once, I'll say it again, because Obama's gone. Things are going to be very bad this year for the people with Obamacare. They're going to have tremendous increases. And the Republicans, frankly, are putting themselves in a very bad position. I tell this to Tom Price all the time, by repealing Obamacare, because people aren't going to see the truly devastating effects of Obamacare. They're not going to see the devastation in 17 and 18 and 19. It'll be gone by then. It'll, whether we do it or not, it'll be imploded off the map. So the press is making it look so wonderful, so that if we end it, everyone's going to say, oh, remember how great Obamacare used to be. Remember how wonderful it used to be. It was so great. It's a little bit like President Obama. When he left, people liked him. When he was here, people didn't like him so much. That's the way life goes. That's human nature. The fact is, Obamacare is a disaster. And I say this to the Republicans all the time. By repealing it, by getting rid of it, by ending it, everyone's going to say, oh, it used to be so great. But it wasn't great. And I tell Tom Price, and I tell Paul Ryan, I tell every one of them, I say the best thing you can do politically is wait a year, because it's going to blow itself off the map. But that's the wrong thing to do for the country. It's the wrong thing to do for our citizens.
You know, of everybody that has spoken out on Obamacare, it's the president that makes the most sense. He's right. Politically, you let this thing stay in place, as we've been discussing today. They own it. Well, now you have to make a decision. Are you gonna do something gutsy? Are you going to fix their mess, which then gets them off the hook politically and then puts you on the hook? Because you know it's going to implode and is imploding and is already a disaster. Now, the best thing that the president said there is that there are going to be options available that nobody's even thinking about now, which is kind of what we've been trying to point out on this program on a regular basis, is that there are solutions out there that are working. You know, I really do love this guy in Wichita, Kansas. I keep talking about him. Linda, what does he say every time we call? We ruin his practice. We ruin his business.
You're
because
blowing up the spot, Sean. He's very popular.
Well, but it's not that. If you think about everybody that I know that went into medicine, not one of them went into medicine so they can get rich. Now, you might see, okay, a doctor's a member of a country club, or a doctor owns a nice car. I had never understood the jealousy and people coveting what other people have. Who cares what anybody drives? Everyone thinks they get in a new car and everybody's looking at you. They're not looking at you. Nobody really gives a rip what you're driving. And you know what? You're not as cool as you think in your little stupid sports car. And I just think it's hilarious that we have such big, fat, disgusting egos. We all think the whole world's looking at us, and they're not. It's just like, you know, when people talk about people's sex lives, they're like, oh, well, this is how... I don't think anybody gives a rip what people are doing in their bedrooms. I don't think people care. I just don't. I think there are some things that you know, everyone's kind of wrapped up in their own world. We're just trying to survive. The average person I know is trying to survive. Anyway, the average doctor I know gives free care every single day of their practice. I know doctors, some of the top surgeons I have met and have been blessed to be friends with in my life, that they're never going to get paid when they operate on somebody's brain or spine. But they do it anyway, and they can't even deduct it. I mean, they'll complain that they can't even deduct it. They should be able to deduct the fact that they're doing surgery for somebody and then know they're not going to get paid. But the reason they do it is they're dedicated servants of their fellow men and women, and they do it for their own personal satisfaction, knowing that, well, maybe if they operated on a father of five kids today and that father's going to live because of the God-given skill they have, that they did something pretty good and decent in their life and something that they could be really proud of. And that's the doctor that I know. Those are the doctors that I know. So, you know, after they go through 4 years of college and 3 years of medical school, and after they serve their internships and residencies, and after they work around-the-clock shifts for next to no money, and they're saving people's lives and learning their craft and learning their skill and learning their profession, and then they have to go borrow more money even after all those student loans, and then they got to get an office, and then they got to get the equipment, and then they got to put the lights on, and then they got to hire staff, and then they got to see a whole bunch of patients before they can even pay their monthly nut. And then so if they get to the point when they're 50-some-odd years old or 48 years old and they have a nice car, well, I think they kind of earned it, at least the people that I know. I mean, I've been very fortunate to know a lot of doctors in my life, and every one of them in their own way is like this. And they're not, and they deserve, and then the government comes along. This is hilarious. The government will come along and say, oh, you can only charge $20 a visit. Okay, hi. Okay, no fever. You can leave now. That's $20 worth of a doctor's time. So it's a very difficult thing, but there are ways to think out of the box. There are ways to fix this problem. One of them is what Dr. Umber does. $10 a month per child, $50 a month per adult. You get all the care you're going to need for the entire year as long as you pay your bill. Then you get stitches, you get a broken bone, you need an x-ray. If you need drugs, he goes directly to the pharmaceutical companies, negotiated 90-95% off the drug prices. He dispenses it directly, so you're saving money there. I mean, it's insane what he's been able to pull off, and they've also duplicated this around the country. He told me, I think, 500, 600, or 1,000 times. I forget the actual number, but it's amazing. Well, why can't we do that in every community? Get groups of doctors that get together, and then if people, you know, want, you know, what is insurance for? Why do you have car insurance? You know, I know a lot of people that have car insurance, but they don't have collision. In other words, if it's their mistake and they hit somebody or they wreck their car, then they have to just go buy another car. They don't have insurance if they make the mistake, but they have insurance, which is mandatory in the case of people that, you know, if you hit somebody in the street and you run some man over and that man is responsible for raising his family, well, then, yeah, then the insurance would kick in because you don't have that kind of money to pay them. Well, what do you really want health insurance for? You want health insurance? Do you want to spend every day at the doctor? Now, my doctor friends, they're my best friends. And you know what the last thing I want to do is see them in their office. Not even for 5 seconds do I want to see them in their office. As a matter of fact, a good doctor friend of mine literally traps me. You know, he's come over to my house to check me out because you haven't been here in 2 years. I need to check you out. And he manhandles me and starts taking my blood pressure. Like, good grief. Can't we go do something else? Let's go play basketball. And so what do you want from your doctor? I mean, if you stub your toe, do you want to run to the doctor? No, but if, God forbid, you cut yourself, you need stitches, you're not going to stitch yourself up in your bathroom, are you? Although I have done that. I will say, well, I didn't actually stitch. I butterflied. Remember I got that new knife, Sweet Baby James, and I was trying to get it working right? And I dropped it on my leg, and a gash was that deep. You know, it's about 3 inches into my leg. And I just said, you know what? I'm not going to the hospital. I'm not going to sit there and wait all day. And I just started pouring hydrogen peroxide all over it. I think I even dumped alcohol in it and burned like crazy. And then I did a butterfly, three butterfly stitches, closed it up, got it nice and tight, put big bandages over it. Voila, Hannity the surgeon. And you know, then I told my doctor later what I did, and he goes, you're an idiot. That's what he said to me. But I don't really want to go to the doctor if I don't have to. That's why I work out, and I try to take care of myself. I'll get checked once a year, every 2 years, 3 years, if I can get away with it. But what do you want? If now, God forbid, I find out I have cancer, I'm going to want to go to a good hospital. If, God forbid, I'm in a horrible accident, and an EMT saves my life and takes me to a local hospital, and they can keep me alive, I'd be very appreciative of that. But God forbid I have a heart attack, I'd want to know that the best doctors are at the local hospital to save my life. And that's what insurance is for, because those things are all expensive. So if you build your own healthcare savings account and you have catastrophic insurance, let's say you have catastrophic insurance and God forbid you get a rare form of cancer, have a bad accident, have a heart attack. Well, at that point, you know, then your insurance kicks in after whatever your deductible is. Let's say if the higher your deductible, the less your monthly payment. But then you're taking a little bit of a risk. You want a $5,000 deductible, $10,000 deductible. Anyway, let's get to our busy telephones here. We'll say hi to Sandy, is in California. Sandy, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Sean, a key signal that there was something wrong with Obamacare was when Congress was exempted from following that law.
Yeah, so that's always a big tip-off, isn't it?
Right. Now, that it's very important that they have an inherent interest in passing a good law. So they have to, and all administration officials have to be required to follow the law. Now, I think that this law work is right in Paul Ryan's bailiwick. And I think President Trump is extremely bright. So I don't like hearing people say that people are pulling the wool over his eyes. I don't believe that. I just believe that there's a lot of grandstanding going on and that these guys are going to have to work together to get a wonderful law or bill passed for all of us, and including themselves. And I don't think the Democrats are going to try to help. To me, they become the party of hate. And I just think that the Republicans need to follow Trump's example. I love that he's talking to everybody. I love that he's having him there for bowling and pizza parties. I love his leadership style. And I think he's an extremely bright man with the help of Tom Price, Paul Ryan, Rand Paul, and all the other guys. They need to work together to have this work to help the American people.
Look, what Trump said today, I think, actually gives me some hope. But it's also got to be done right. It can't be this, you know, divided, rammed down the throats of conservative bill like they marked up. And I think what you're going to see is, as Newt pointed out, it's part of a process, one that I frankly don't understand, because I think things like this could be handled much differently. You know, in the course of doing business in my life, all my life, I never did business this way. And that is that if somebody's opposing what we're about to do, we don't just write up the contract and then start from there. You solve the problems first, then you write up the contract, and everyone goes out and said, all right, this is our deal.
You know, though, they might accuse the Republicans of doing everything in the dark, which is what the Democrats did. So at
I'm not saying do it in the dark. They could have had at least built a consensus. But if they built a consensus where every Republican in the House, or most of them, and every senator and Republican senator and the president agreed, you know, it would have prevented this public fight that's going on. And that's all I'm trying to get rid of. Anyway, Craig in Lynchburg, Virginia, the home of Liberty University. What's up, Craig? How are you, sir?
Hey, there you are. Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Hey, I've been just thinking that since last week, the conversations have been about the hacking into Trump's servers, and the left claiming, well, they didn't hack his telephones. He's claiming to hack his telephones. I work in IT. I actually work at Liberty, where you just mentioned. And it's amazing to me that people in this day and age don't realize how serious that is. We're not talking about – I'm sure Trump Tower does not have a Ma Bell closet like the old buildings did, with miles of copper line. Everything's run. It's called VoIP, Voice Over Internet provider. So if they got a warrant to access his server, they got his phones. They were listening. They had the ability at that point to turn and go the other way through the fiber and turn his computers on and turn them into surveillance devices. I was thinking about this because of the timing of these two different warrants. He's the presumptive nominee, but not yet. The election hadn't happened. You remember how they did this to people that supported Romney in 2012, and the next thing you know, the IRS is going after these people, turning down their 503C applications. I wonder if they weren't going after Trump's donor list by doing all this stuff.
What my sources are telling me is it was every time that they, the law enforcement in any way, shape, form, or capacity looked into this, they found nothing and debunked it. And it was never the big source of what they were looking at. And it might not have even been the October FISA, may not have even been related to Trump at all. So that's all I can tell you at this point, which means the media has been wrong about everything from the get-go.
If you miss one day, you'll be out of the loop.
Would someone please tell me what is going on here?
This is the Sean Hannity Show.
All right, from D.C., that's going to wrap things up for tonight. Hannity from here tonight, 10 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. Back in New York, hopefully we can make it tomorrow. We're going to get to the alt-left freakout, Russian hypocrisy that keeps turning out not to be true. We're going to explain that the media does not get it. We'll also have Pat Buchanan's take on this. Sarah Carter from Circa News has been saying, no, they didn't find anything on Donald Trump in Russia. There was no collusion. We'll have the latest on repealing and replacing. Dr. Umber is back with us tonight from Atlas MD. 10 Eastern, Hannity, Fox.